Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
As you just heard, the Buffalo Bills will open their 2019 preseason on Thursday at home against the Colts. But today it was the final practice at St. John Fisher College for the Bills in Rochester. And while not a whole lot was going on the field today, there's been plenty of talk recently about running back LeSean McCoy's future in Buffalo. And it went back as far as last year's trade deadline. Today, following practice, McCoy talked about that a little bit.
I mean, I've seen that, but I mean, for the last 2 years, people have been saying that. You know what I'm saying? If that was the case, I'd have been gone. I mean, two teams were trying to get me. So if I'd have been gone, I'd have got some for me, right? Yeah. Trade picks, teams are calling, agent blowing. I mean, so if that happened, then they'd have let me go and got something, right? So that makes sense.
You can listen to the full interview with McCoy at WGR550.com and at the radio.com app. Some injury notes from camp today. Cornerback E.J. Gaines is set to miss a few weeks with a groin injury. It's been a little bit of a nagging injury for Gaines as he's missed 15 games in the last 2 years with that groin. Also, the Bills put offensive lineman LeAdrian Waddle on IR this morning with a torn quad. And to fill his spot, they signed offensive lineman and Rochester, New York native Jerron Jones. Coverage of Bills training camp on WGR is presented by M&T Bank, the official bank of the Buffalo Bills, by Fiegel Carr and Joyce, your border attorneys, the Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women, and by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. The Dallas Cowboys are also making headlines in the NFL today. Representatives of running back Ezekiel Elliott have reportedly told the Cowboys that he will not play this season without getting a new deal first. Reports also say that Cowboys owner Jerry Jones wants a deal done before week one. Jane Slater from NFL Network also reported that the Cowboys plan to let Amari Cooper, their wide receiver, play out the final year of his contract while still negotiating an extension with him. The same is going to be done with Dak Prescott, their quarterback, who is in the final year of his deal. However, they're looking to give Prescott a little bit more money than Cooper. Down in Miami, Ryan Fitzpatrick continues to get first-team reps at QB for the Dolphins over Josh Rosen. Dolphins head coach Brian Flores says that Fitzpatrick will be the starter in their preseason opener. Bisons are in action tonight down in Toledo. They are set to open a 3-game series with the Mudhens. 7:05 is the scheduled first pitch for that one, and you can tune in over on ESPN 1520. And don't miss Atwall's For Your Eyes Only event this Thursday, August 8th at 5:30 p.m., hosted by our own Jeremy White. You can see a live LASIK surgery, get a free $150 LASIK evaluation, and you have a chance to win prizes and designer sunglasses. Hurry up and RSVP at 892-2020. For WGR, I'm John Simon. Headlines are coming at 4:30. And remember, it's easy to listen to WGR anytime, anywhere. Just ask your smart speaker to play WGR Sports Radio 550.
It's Mike Shope.
I have these notes, but I gotta say, I'm just fired up to be here today.
And the Bulldog.
Pretty cool. Pretty damn cool. Woo!
On WGR.
Come on! Get up! Come on, get up if you're as psyched as I am.
Sports Radio 550.
Scenes from the last day at Fisher. The Bills wrapped up their... How do you want it? Their Rochester portion of training camp, or did they wrap up training camp? They have a game Thursday. They're off to South Carolina next week for practices. Training camp's over.
No, this is all still training camp.
It is?
Yes. Joint practices in Carolina, training camp. Orchard Park practices, training camp. 90 guys, training camp. It's training camp.
All right.
They don't start.
Warren Sharp, do you have a chapter about this in your book? Warren, do you have a chapter on how to define the term training camp? When is it actually over?
It is over when the third preseason game is over.
Okay.
See?
All right, fine.
I need some guys cut before training camp is over.
I'm not arguing with Warren Sharp. I know that.
Thank you, Warren.
Warren, thanks for being on with us. You can follow Warren on Twitter, as thousands of people already do, at Sharp Football. Hey, we don't really like know each other as friends or anything, but you've been on the show a few times. I've followed your career. Is your profile getting a lot bigger? It seems like it might be.
There definitely has been a lot more people interested in kind of keeping up with the advanced analytics and the stats and the kind of different style of analysis that I offer. So, yeah, it definitely has been improving, but I like it. One of the things I've strived to do ever since I first started on Twitter was not share the same type of information that everybody else is sharing, to try to approach things from a slightly different perspective to try to get different answers. And I think that that's been one of the calling cards for why people are interested in my work.
Could you see, if you don't mind me asking, could you see in your future working for a team? And is that something that might be possible?
Definitely. You know, I actually went on a couple of different interviews this past offseason with teams that reached out that wanted me in a full-time role. You know, I'd obviously have to give up everything I do in the media and work just for that singular team. And I met everybody in the coaching staff in those meetings. But it was tough at this point in my career with how things are trending in the sports betting world and everything else to want to jump to do that. But I did consult with a team last season, and there's a number of teams that have reached out that are just interested in consulting work, where I can work for a few different teams as a weekly consultant, helping them with game plans and strategies. And so that is something that I'm doing this season for more than just the one team that I did it with last year.
Very good. Well, good luck with that. Right now in the league, we have the drama around Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon and running backs. And this is a hot topic, especially perhaps for analytics-minded fans and analysts. So how do you think this plays out, Warren, either specifically with those running backs in mind or just in general? Are teams going to downright stop paying the best running backs in the league, you know, real good NFL money?
It is such a hot button issue because you definitely have the contingent of analytics people who have opinions supported by the true data, which shows that the downgrade between that guy and who his replacement might be is not going to be that big of a difference. And the difference that you'd save in salary cap would massively be able to help improve your team at the positions that matter, right? At either quarterback, your offensive line, maybe your secondary, your edge rushers, those types of positions. But then you have the other side of the coin where there are people that hardcore believe in players deserve to get paid, and running backs put themselves through the most beatings that any player does in the league, or one of the closest, and that those guys deserve to get paid as much as they can possibly get because their careers are so short. And neither side is like very willing to like meet in the middle. But you know, the fact is, the people who want to pay these backs a lot of money because they're worth it, and the salary cap around the league is rising, and so backs should be getting more of that, and so their salary cap number should increase as well. The problem with that school of thought is that they're exactly right. The contracts for these guys, their careers are shorter because it's the most injured-prone position that we have in the NFL. These guys statistically get injured quicker, and the problem, you wind up in these Todd Gurley situations where you have a guy, you loved what he did on his rookie deal. You have a new coach, you think you're going to use him a lot. He's going to be your three-down bell cow back. You get him, you pay him, second contract, his first season, and because you're using him so much, he ends up getting injured. And then you're in a situation where you've committed a bunch of money to this guy, but you now realize that we can't use him as a three-down bell cow back because he's too old and he's too brittle and he's not going to hold up to that. So now we're going to have to go and draft guys. We're going to have to draft guys somewhat in the third round as running backs to help augment the fact. So it's just messy. There's no clear-cut right answer. I don't think that these guys should be taking up as large of a percentage of your salary cap. We saw guys go down last season. Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, their backups came in. James Conner, C.J. Anderson statistically outproduced those two guys in terms of their production. And Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley were the two best running backs of 2017, like literally the number one and number two. Think about it from a quarterback perspective. If you had two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL go out and you just had to put their backups in, there's not a chance they would outperform I mean, as long as we're not talking about, like, bad starting quarterbacks, not a chance they'd outperform those guys. So running back's just a really different position, and it has to be treated as a very unique position.
You know, working and living in Buffalo and working here as we do, I feel like we were pretty early to the frustration with devoting big-time assets to running backs, Warren. The Bills, for years, really our entire careers together, Mike and I have been together, I think this will be our 16th season coming up, together. And the Bills have almost always had a bell cow running back. And normally, like, Travis Henry was a second-round pick, and then there's a run of first-round picks that include McGahee and Marshawn Lynch and C.J. Spiller. And then there's Fred Jackson, who showed up off the street. And Jackson may have been the best of the whole bunch, which is, like, maddening. But at the same time, I grew up in an era where running backs were the stars in the game, and I find myself feeling somewhat sympathetic to these guys that they're kind of being left behind while corners and receivers and quarterbacks reap all the rewards of this league that's just, you know, growing exponentially year by year, it seems.
I don't disagree one bit. The fact of the matter is running backs are always going to hold some value, right? Teams are never going to go where they're 100% pass because it's more efficient to run the football in certain situations, specifically short yardage situations as well as down inside of the red zone. Those are the most optimal times to run a running back. But you do not want to be using him as often on first and second down, especially second and long, as teams have been using them in the past that in the eras that we grew up in and watched, you know, Emmitt Smith just carrying so much load down for the Dallas Cowboys and many other backs around the league doing similar things. It's just a totally different game, and I am sympathetic to the effort they put in, and they're professionals now, and they've been told all along their way that they're the best running back, high school, college, you know, into the league, and now they're coming up to try to get a new contract, and teams are telling them, we don't value you as much anymore. And it is definitely a hard blow for them to face, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. With Warren Sharp at Sharp Football on Twitter, sharpfootballanalysis.com for his excellent book, and you can learn a lot from that. So one thing that worked well for the Bills and Josh Allen last year, Warren, was Allen running. And it's been interesting. A lot of people have been doing this, comparing Buffalo and Baltimore and the two young quarterbacks, the respective quarterbacks, who both ran the ball very well last year. Baltimore, it seems, much more by design. But still, yards are yards, and the Bills got a lot out of Josh Allen and his legs, 8 rushing touchdowns. How should a fan look at that? Is that something, like, I'm right with you. I've learned from you. I want to throw the ball all the time. What do I do with what Josh Allen is capable of running, though?
It's really great. It's a great question because I think Brian Daboll is doing this the perfect way for a quarterback like Josh Allen. When the defense is playing pass and there is an open running lane and your first read is not there and you move over and you see your second read is not in the situation you want to be putting the ball into, then by all means, if that lane is there, go ahead and take it. There's two optimal times that you would run a run your quarterback, and I'm not talking about just like pure efficiency, right? Inside the red zone, quarterback runs are great. Sneaks, I did a study on Philip Rivers and the fact that this guy just refuses to sneak the ball whatsoever. And sneaks are one of the most optimal things in short yardage that the quarterbacks need to do more of around the league. And Josh Allen is certainly built to be able to deal with quarterback sneaks. So that's great too. But the other times that you would want to be running your quarterback is when those running lanes open up on a designed pass play, take it but get down. Right, take that free yardage that you're getting, but stay out of being even hit in the least amount of it. You've got to stay healthy on those plays. And then the other one is a more of a pure designed run where theoretically, hopefully that run is leading you towards space where the defense is not or they're blocked. And so you would be able to control, at least from what you decide to do when you get down, whether or not you're going to get hit. So those are the times that you want to run with Josh Allen. You don't really want a quarterback like Josh Allen to have to try to get to his third read and then force the ball on that third read if the guy's somewhat covered. We know his accuracy is not great. So you want to try to build those running lanes into the offense and coach Josh to take the run when it's there, but avoid contact as much as possible because regardless of what fans around the league want to say about Josh Allen, he is your best chance of winning games. And you want to keep him healthy as long as possible in the season. So I like the way he did it towards the end of last season. It's a very smart way to continue it. Reduce the hits, though. Don't take as many hits. Run when it's the smart time to run. But other than that, I'm all in favor of Josh Allen using his legs.
By the way, Warren, we talked about what you wrote about Rivers in here that day. It was 64 games last 4 years, 68 yards, maybe. No rushing touchdown since 2011, I think. And it's just awesome. This is just an awesome find. Has he been asked about the sneaks? Like, is that something he would – how would he answer the question? What's the deal? How come you never run a quarterback sneak? Has he answered the question?
He has not. I've been dying to get a reporter to ask, but actually I'm friends with Nick Hardwick, who is his prior center, if you guys remember the guy with the arm sleeve tattoos. And so I asked Nick, I said, why doesn't he do it? He said, well, back years ago, Philip Rivers tore his ACL. Actually, he played on a torn ACL. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was a playoff game. He had surgery before the game to repair what I believe was a bucket handle tear to his meniscus, but he had also torn his ACL and just played on the torn ACL. I mean, the guy's one of the best competitors in the league. But ever since then, he said he hasn't tried to quarterback sneak it very much at all, and clearly the numbers bear that out. But I also, part of me thinks that, I mean, look, Rivers is such a competitor, right? If he knew, if he had an analytics department that told him, you have a, you know, a 30% better chance of getting a first down than if you turn around and hand it to your running back, I think he would probably sneak it a couple times. The problem is, for years, the L.A. Chargers, previously San Diego Chargers, did not have an analytics department. So nobody was telling him these types of things, and as a result, he wasn't sneaking. I hope that somebody tells him, and I hope that he at least sneaks once. I mean, I joked that Vegas should set a total on over-under sneaks at 0.5 and see if he hits the over this year.
Yeah, he doesn't need an analytics department on this right now. He needs an iPhone. That's what he needs to know to figure this one out.
It's really interesting that you've got this relationship with his former center, because when we talked about this, whenever that story was about Rivers not sneaking, I don't think I ever said it on the air, but my guess, I think a lot of people would arrive at this conclusion, at least I'm going to say that to compliment me having the thought, is worried about banging his head off people. Like, concussion would be an issue with quarterback sneaks, and instead it's an ACL, which is not something I would have thought of.
He must just not think he needs it. Like, that's the overall point here, isn't it? When it comes to, like, the point you make about the analytics department, he just must not think it's valuable. So
I agree. And if he had the department, he would know that it would help him win. He's such a competitor. I'm sure he would try to sneak more. But Nick Hardwick, I mean, his direct quote to me was, we used to run a ton of quarterback sneaks up until he tore his ACL in 2007.
Interesting.
So, I mean, it's been like over a decade since he hasn't been running them quite as much. I think he needs to use it a few times, though, to help his team win. Because they got a talented team, but they just can't ever get to the promised land. And a couple extra first downs would definitely help.
Right. So one thing, we're with Warren Sharp here for a few more minutes. One thing you pointed out recently was that there has not been much movement in the win totals across the league this year, the betting totals, but the team with the most positive movement or upward movement is Buffalo. We talked with you one time in the spring about this and recalled that last year you were pretty negative on them. That one Colts bet, we remember. I'm going to remember that for a long time. So this year, like, people like the Bills over 7. What do you make of that?
I don't disagree. The line's pretty much moved up to 7.5 at many of the spots right now. I mainly would be interested in that, and I don't have a strong enough opinion to bet over 7.5. Right, I would not have bet under 7, which is what I did last year. But it's mainly because of Sean McDermott. I really have a lot of confidence in what he's going to be capable of doing with this defense, and how good and underrated this defense is. Compared to a lot of other teams in the league. And, of course, you've got Miami doing what Miami's doing this year. That only helps you guys. The other thing that you've got that you didn't have last year is you've got a run game that's finally going to face a pretty easy schedule. At least by my count, I saw you guys playing the third hardest schedule of run defenses last year. I project you to face, I think it's the seventh easiest schedule of run defenses this year. So we know how little that LeSean McCoy and that Chris Ivory contributed on the ground last season for you guys. I'm hoping that there'll be a little bit more support from the run game when you choose to run it. And, you know, unfortunately for you guys, Maybe this will change a little bit in year two, but Brian Daboll decided that he's going to, quote-unquote, protect Josh Allen by running it more. But when you're playing really good run defenses that know you're going to run, and on early downs in one-score games, you run it 60% of the time, which was the most in the league, and the average is 48% runs, and you guys are up at 60. Like, defenses are going to key on that. So they need to be a little bit more balanced and have some better play calling, and I think some of it's going to be Daboll being more familiar with Allen, Allen being more familiar with the offense. But I hope that they call plays a little bit more intelligently, and then coupled with the easier schedule, I think that they should be a team that would be right in that 7-8 win range, hopefully.
Yeah, if I get nudged at all to a more optimistic place, it's a lot of it is based on something you referenced already a few minutes ago, Warren, and that was like the back end of the schedule, really post Allen's injury, how they used him in spread formations, and that was a lot of that was ended up being him running, but it felt to me like Daboll sort of, you know, I guess it makes sense. They started the season with Nathan Peterman as their starting quarterback, so they had a certain kind of offense in mind, and then you get, I don't know how, if it's exactly 180 degrees from Nathan Peterman to Josh Allen, but it's probably pretty damn close. Big arm, big athlete, as opposed to, like, not a big arm, smart guy, knows how to read, all that sort of stuff. And them knowing how, and Daboll specifically knowing how to best utilize Allen's skill set.
Yeah, when you guys, from week 10 onwards, you went 4-3. But when I look at my early down success rate metric, which is in my book, and it's one of the most correlated things to wins in the game, you won the early down success rate battle in every single game except for that Patriots game, right? So out of those seven games, you went 6-1 in the early down success rate battle. You won it against Miami, but you lost by 4, and you won it against the Jets, but you lost by 4. So, those two games arguably could have been wins for you guys. But I love the way that you closed out the season. Definitely reason for optimism.
Warren, just a quick question to close with. I was thinking about this yesterday, trying to find a stat to work with, and I found the Bills ranked really high last year in first downs by penalty. This might be kind of out of nowhere. I just wonder if you know whether that's predictive of anything. Warren?
I'm here. No, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I do not believe that is predictive.
Okay.
I don't know enough about the first downs by penalty metric to be able to assess whether or not that is predictive, but I doubt that is something that would be.
Okay. That is how it looked, given the records of the teams at the top of that list. Interesting point on the Bills' defense statistically. Last 2 years, I think the number is 18th. They're ranking in points allowed each of the last 2 years. I think the number is 18. It's the same. And last year they were second in yards allowed. In the previous year, when they also ranked 18th in points allowed, they were 30th. So you have a really interesting thing to figure out there too. Second in points allowed, or rather yards allowed, 18th in points. Previous year, 30th in yards allowed, 18th in points. It's almost funny.
Yeah, and you guys, look, you guys' red zone defense was very bad last year. It was sixth worst in the league by my numbers. So you were top 8 in early down success rate defense, but you were sixth worst in that red zone defensive statistics. So if you can improve that and make that more in line with the way that you play defense over the rest of the field, again, your 8th best early down success rate, 2nd best in overall defensive efficiency, I think that's going to go a long way. And last thing, if I could throw in there, is that, like I mentioned, week 10 onward, how you guys went 6-1 in early down success rate battle. You did really good. You finished 4-3 in those games. Think back to 2017. If anybody has my 2017 book, over the last 15 games that you guys played, so not week one where you beat the Jets in 2017, but the last 15 games, you won the early down success rate battle one time out of those last 15 games. So the fact that you guys did what you did towards the end of the season, going 6-1, winning that battle, a much, much bigger difference than where this football team was after that and during that 2017 season. And I've got a lot of reasons for optimism. But one thing that I'm scared about, you guys know this more than I, your offensive line and the injuries you suffered, and now you're going to have to go back to Russell Bodine at center for a little while. while Mitch Morse is dealing with his concussion protocol. That's scary to me a little bit.
Mm-hmm. For much, much more, check out Warren's book. You can find the 2019 football preview, Warren Sharp's 2019 football preview. You can find it through his website, sharpfootballanalysis.com, and just know when to the interesting nuggets in there. Warren, continued success, and thanks a lot for your time, as always.
Thank you, fellas.
All right. Warren Sharp. Early down success rate. Oof, I'm tingly.
It's encouraging that they were that good at that in that stretch of games at the end. Well, not even at the end. I mean, it's almost half the season, right?
That's right.
About seven games.
That's right. It's both Dolphin games and both Jet games. And then Detroit. This is not the order. Detroit, Jacksonville, and New England. And he said that's the one that where right. They didn't win that stat. Interesting. I have a question for you that has nothing to do with anything. 803-0550 is the number.
Let me open a browser here.
So there's just a random question you have not prepared for. Also, Dave Gettleman, often the source of high comedy.
Ooh, I missed something.
With a quote about his quarterbacks. When will Daniel Jones go in? He got a question along those lines and answered it. And so stay tuned. Give us a call even, 803-0550. Want to comment on something Warren brought up or we brought up? That's, you know, what we're looking for. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. Sal Capaccio with a report from the last day of training camp at Fisher. That'll be at...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
5 here on WGR.
From a media standpoint, or people on the outside, they'll look at, you know, the team and say, well, you know, they're pretty deep here. You know, or they're pretty deep there. And I think it's always hard to do that unless you have someone that is a backup that has played, that has produced, you know, good depth would be. Obviously, we acquired Nick from Philadelphia, and he was one of the quarterbacks with Carson Wentz. I would say that's a heck of a depth right there.
Doug Marrone. How do you like that? That guy making it onto the show today. A clip.
So I gotta be rooting for Doug Marrone now. We have a Jaguars bet, so I'm rooting for the Doug or not.
Does he have to win a certain number of games to stay on? Is this a big year for him?
This is year three for him there, right?
At least. I mean, I don't know. Was that
he's the coach when they go to the AFC Championship game? So it's at least three. Yeah,
not his first year though. Did that happen in his first year as their coach? I think maybe it didn't.
Yeah, okay. I'll check on that. Either way, I'm pulling for him. Does he need to? Yeah, I don't know, maybe. Yeah. I mean, they've changed quarterbacks. If it does, the coordinators knew he fired Nate Hackett, who was here with him in Buffalo, and Hackett's in Green Bay now. Speaking of the bet board.
We have a bet on him,
we
too.
We have a Nate Hackett bet. I somehow thought it was a good idea to suggest he'd be a head coach by 2021 in the league. He's in Green Bay. That should go well. Aaron Rodgers is good. That's the logic. Like, that'll go well. He'll get credit and therefore get a job. We'll see. But, yeah, I guess Marrone is probably it's probably time for him to win.
And this is his third season. He coached two games as the interim in 2016, but three full seasons.
Okay, so he was there, right? He was there as an assistant and then took over as head coach. Okay.
Yeah.
From Gus Bradley?
Yes.
Okay. He was the offensive line coach. All right, very good. Here is Scott with us. Hello, Scott.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing really well. Thank you.
I wanted to comment on the Ezekiel Elliott contract situation and then kind of tie it in with the Bills situation. For me personally, I wouldn't want the Bills to be in that situation where they have to pay a running back and use a lot of their cap space on a running back. Although being with how Le'Veon Bell set the market, I understand why Ezekiel Elliott wants this money. Otherwise, he's going to play, this is what, his fourth and then fifth-year season option, and then they might franchise tag him. So he's going to get run in the ground for three more years and then maybe get let walk. So I understand why he wants to get paid. But with the Bills, I'm glad that they – it doesn't look like, or I wouldn't guess that they're going to have to deal with that in the way that their roster and cap is set up. You know, they got a lot of money coming up, and I just feel like they're in a good position for in the future to pay the right guys at the right positions that matter. You know, just let's just assume that Allen's the guy. You know, he's going to need to get money. I hope that we can pay Tre'Davious White.
Yes.
Edmonds. Yeah. And then, you know, hopefully we get a pass rusher coming up that we want to pay. And, you know, I think that with McCoy, they just figured let's just let him play out the contract and let's hope Singletary can be a guy. And I just feel like we're set up to pay the right guys at the right position, assuming that the guys we have that are due to get paid are worth it. And I'll hang up and hear what you guys have to say.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Well, I don't think anything you said is wrong. Like, I think they are. It, you know, part of the running back thing is knowing not to do it. And any team can feel pressure to sign a player that's done well for them in the past and maybe still not really be that sure or confident that that player will do that much for them in the future. But he's a fan favorite, and you know, you have ancillary benefits from that. So we'll see what the Bills do. But yeah, Trey White is a big one, and I'd want him to be here a long time. I mean, he's been elite since he walked in the door. And Allen, like, we'll see, but Wright, you know, you certainly want to prepare for that, cap-wise, money-wise, down the road. And running back should not be in the equation. I think that that's definitely the case.
And I don't know. I mean, we've got – what do we have for evidence as to how they feel about paying running backs? I mean, they've carried McCoy on the roster. It hasn't been a problem. He's never said, I want to be paid like Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid. He was being paid pretty handsomely for his age anyway. They had the room to carry that, so it's not like we know that they recognize not to do it, not to overpay in building your team, like in theory. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I wouldn't want to hold the fact that they've kept McCoy on the roster against them, because there was room to do it, and there's really not much of a financial benefit to doing it now other than just not giving him the money. Like, they don't need the money to pay their quarterback right now or someone else. So so we've got that, and then we've got that they drafted perhaps someone that they view as McCoy's eventual replacement in the third round. And that's encouraging. Now, if we go through the year and let's just – here's a hypothetical for you. McCoy has a big bounce back year and is pretty good. And Singletary, therefore, doesn't play that much. And we're not really sure what he is going into next year. And that's a problem in and of itself, but it could happen. What do they do? Frank Gore is on a one-year deal. McCoy will be a free agent. I wouldn't expect them to go try to pay LeSean McCoy, but they might feel like they need to go shopping for a big-name running back to replace LeSean McCoy. He just had a great year, and we don't really know who the kid is yet. Like, I'm not positive that they wouldn't do that.
I would be positive the Bills will not sign a running back to money until one of these years they just not do it.
Right. So
they've had an expensive running back pretty much every year of my career.
But Singletary is the key to it. Like, if he can demonstrate that he's capable of being some reasonable facsimile of what they have felt they had in McCoy, it'll be 3 years after this year that he's been here, then I think the Bills will be on the right page. They drafted a guy in the third round. They're paying him on a third-round contract. And maybe, you know, a second contract for that guy, if he pans out, is moderate because of where he was drafted. I don't know. It's just hard to really know where they stand, I guess, is what I'm saying, because I think there's evidence on both sides.
The caveat to what I just said was expensive if you consider first-round pick money. Like, those guys didn't get paid big right out of the draft.
And nobody got a second contract.
Yeah, like expensive in a certain less literal sense, expensive. Mm-hmm. But what we know, what I mean is they've just made it a huge investment in one form or another at that position. And, you know, not everybody in the NFL was talking about this 10 years ago or 5 years ago.
No,
it's not all egregious. In retrospect, it looks pretty bad. Like, McGahee looks pretty bad as an idea in retrospect. So does Lynch. You know, these guys weren't even bad players. They just didn't help the Bills win. And their position, it seems like, when as you learn more about this, is a big part of that.
Sure, and the team got just as effective, if not better, performance out of a guy that just walked in off the street in Fred Jackson.
Yeah.
So, like, there's your case. So the thing that I guess I'd be most encouraged about as it pertains to the Bills moving forward is that they drafted Devin Singletary in the third round. And they didn't feel the need to draft a running back any higher than that to potentially, you know, be a replacement for LeSean McCoy in the last year of his contract.
Yeah, there's lots of things to say about it. Even thinking about Warren Sharp being on, using the point of making the point about the Rams. I mean, it's just really excellent and I think obvious at the same time. The point about the Rams is they, in this particular sense, needed to spend a third round pick on a running back in Daryl Henderson because of Gurley being no longer, you know, at full strength, if you will. So that draft pick sort of goes onto the pile. It's more spending, again, in that sense. It's more spending at that position that you're doing because the running back you have, who you're also paying handsomely, is not exactly right. And so the Bills doing a third-round pick here, you never know how the rest of the draft is going to go, so that's not something you can hold against a team. But McCoy is old, and Gore is older. So they would have maybe felt pressure to come out of that draft with a running back. You know, if the guy they got is good, then I think the fact that he was picked in the third round will be looked at more as like, wow, found money, than the opposite. You know, it isn't the first or second round, obviously. So on a quick left turn on Saturday, I guess, first time making cheesesteaks for a party.
Okay.
And two questions. One, what's the right cheese?
I like, if you can find it, like a Swiss American blend the best, but that might be elusive. In which case, I would just say, like, I like white American cheese on a cheesesteak.
Okay. I think that's a good choice. Like a Philly cheesesteak at a lot of places, you're going to get the cheese whiz thing. Right. I didn't really want to do that.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about that cheese whiz.
It's got to be, though. It's that makes it a real, like, cheesesteak. Otherwise, you're kind of, you feel like you're tampering with it.
Okay.
With the original idea of what it's
as
supposed to be.
As opposed to making an actual cheesesteak, you're just making steak sandwiches.
Yeah, that's
steak
right.
Steak and cheese sandwiches.
I don't want to argue with that. Yeah. I understand that point.
I also like provolone on that.
Does it melt as well as
you
need it to?
I would go pepper jack over provolone.
You gotta get a lid on top of it to really it's a harder melt.
I asked the woman I was near the deli counter at Wegmans. And I said, "What cheese?" I said, "Do you know your cheese?" Like she worked there.
Yeah,
she was in the area. I said, "Do you know your cheese?" She said, "Yes, I do."
All right.
I said, "What's the best cheese for a cheesesteak?" She said, "Steakhouse onion."
Ooh.
They have like this fancier
steakhouse.
Maybe it's Yancey's Fancy. I'm not sure.
The steakhouse
onion cheese.
Yeah,
so I bought that.
Suddenly I'm thinking about Mike Robitaille. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes. And suddenly I'm thinking about Thurman yelling, "Dip it."
Yeah.
That cheese worked great. Steakhouse onion.
Okay.
Two. What is the primo cheesesteak condiment?
I like a little mayo and a little oil, but if I had to choose one over the other, I think some kind of an oil based, not quite Italian dressing, but like, you know, the oil they put on subs. That is what I want on that.
On a cheesesteak.
Yeah.
That I would never do.
Okay. I like that. All right. Well,
okay. I mean, if you could only choose one, we went around and around on this on Saturday. That's the kind of fun we have. And my brother-in-law said, we talked about mayonnaise, we talked about ketchup, we talked about
get out of here. Different
things. Ruin it.
Get the hell out of here with ketchup.
He's like, maybe steak sauce is what you want if you're going to put one thing on this.
It's very powerful, though.
Yes. Like,
you got to be very careful with
or
that.
Or Worcestershire.
Yeah, right. That is almost
that's
pungent.
Right. That's what you're tasting and smelling when you're eating it, if that's what you use.
Yeah.
See, I'm not going to put ketchup on one.
I don't really need a condiment. If the cheese, if you get the Swiss American blend or even just white American cheese, I don't really need mayo. Like it's going to be gooey enough, and I like the oil for the if you've got lettuce and tomato and stuff like on there.
Peppers and onions.
Okay, peppers and onions, then maybe you don't even – I don't know that you need anything.
You're talking about a steak sub, which you're building with the oil and mayonnaise.
That's right.
Shredded lettuce.
That's right. You're more like a steak hoagie straight up. Cheesesteak. I like banana peppers and onions, and I don't know, man. Maybe a little mayo. But not a lot, because it's going to be slipping and sliding all over the place.
I was going to say, if you get the cheese right, whether even if it's the cheese whiz, whatever you're doing, if you're getting the cheese right, melting that, you don't need a condiment.
I agree.
Yep, that's right.
But I would always throw some peppers and onions in there.
Got to do it. Sure. Yeah. Got to do it.
Has to be.
We did mushrooms, too.
That sounds like a win.
Yeah, it was good.
All right.
Hot dog rolls, even. Made them for the kids. Hot dog rolls. Mm. Just that's big enough, too.
It's for the kids.
It's big enough.
Yeah.
There's a pound and a half of shaved steak, hot dog rolls, cheese, peppers, onions, mushrooms. I made six good-sized cheesesteaks with that.
All right.
There you go. All right. Very controversial.
Hot dog roll issue. Is a little disappointing texture-wise, I think, for this meal. I don't know that I'm down with the hot dog roll.
Interesting. Texture-wise.
I don't know. Just
what do you want on that? What do you want? What is it? Not hold right?
I think it's too soft. I think it's going to get too squishy, too soggy.
Yeah. Okay, maybe that's right.
Yeah.
You're going to need to toast it. you're not going to be able to pull it off.
In that case, then okay.
You cook the steak on the stove and the saute the vegetables. Then you put the steak in the rolls, set the cheese slices on top of the steak, and then you put it in the oven.
Ooh, did you use your broiler? Because
I still don't understand broiler. But we put
broiler.
It in the oven for like 3 minutes, and it was just right. So you got your toasting there, you got your melting there, and then you put the vegetables on top.
I predict your wife used the broiler. She turned the broiler on for you.
It was her idea.
All right.
You got me.
I think the broiler was used there.
Sal Capaccio coming up. There's new information about him that he doesn't even know yet. That's in like 10 minutes here on WGR.
Time for us to fill you in once again about this event that's happening on Saturday at Riverworks Blended, Buffalo's premier cigar event. Enjoy a full lunch, sip fine bourbons, get expert advice on cigar blending, cutting, pairings, and more. Our buddy Rob Ray is going to be there. Join him and lots of others. Saturday, August 10th. That's this Saturday. Blended, Buffalo's premier cigar event. Tickets and details at WGR550.com.
Here, everyone, little secret. It almost doesn't matter what the subject is or what time it is. If someone calls in and is screened and the screener writes on the screen under comments, the comments for us, the words are, you're doing it all wrong. We will take your call.
You're right to the front of the
line. It does not matter what we're talking about or what time it is. We will stay late. If you call in, I spoke for you there, and it's written on the screen, you're doing it all wrong. You are getting on. Evan, go ahead.
Yes. All right, so I live about 45 minutes from Philly. I'm in South Jersey, so it's kind of cheesesteak territory. And I had to call in because I remember listening a couple months ago. I think it was Sal had never heard of rice pudding. Big balls had never heard of quiche. I got to call in because your guys' culinary skills are off. But when it comes to cheesesteaks, it's got to be ribeye sliced thin. I don't know. What type of steak did you use, Mike?
Just a shaved steak that was prepared at the store. Nothing special. Okay. It was for kids, mostly.
Not ribeye. Yeah. All right. So it's got to be ribeye, provolone cheese. And down here, if you order a cheesesteak, it's cheesesteak, and you get with or without onions. If you order a cheesesteak hoagie, they also add on lettuce and tomato. And as far as condiments, it's either mayonnaise, ketchup, or they serve like a hot pepper relish, which would probably be more of Chris's pace.
Yeah.
Nice, spicy little relish.
I want some credit for suggesting provolone, by the way. Doing it all wrong. Like, I suggested the cheese that you say it has to be was one of my suggestions.
Standard is American, but I don't like American. So I provolone is probably the second most popular.
Well, look, I defer to your authority on this. I've had cheesesteaks in Philly several times, and I know it's different. But I wanted to know, like, what is the best option here? And, you know, you can order these things many different ways. Usually I get, a chicken one down there. But I just, like, for a condiment, none of those ideas seems really that good. And neither does steak sauce. So I don't think I want anything on it. But
and no hot dog bun, Mike.
Yeah, okay, Evan. I've taken enough of a beating here from Evan.
Getting clobbered on the hot dog roll thing.
It's what we had. But, you know, you don't, these are all important factors. You don't want the big roly roll that, like, all you're eating is the roll.
No, that's right.
You know, that's like, sometimes right. At the store they've got that. There's the ones in the plastic bags that are good, and then you can go to that special area, the bakery, and they've got those giant, hard, huge rolls that you just be eating roll there. No. I definitely wanted to avoid
that. All you need here, really, for this is your classic Costanzo's sub roll. That is the quintessential. That's perfect.
Fine.
It's stable. It'll toast up nice. It's going to hold everything you want to put in there, which is important. I mean, because, you know, you don't have the thing flopping all over the place.
It's totally the best idea. We had hot dog rolls, and the fact that they weren't bigger than they were worked out.
For the kids, yeah.
That's all.
Right. You served me they kind of a steak sub on a hot dog roll, and it's just, what the hell's going on here?
Well, listen.
Where did I go?
Now enter Greg Bauk to tell you, don't go to Mike's for steak anything.
He's going
to
make it the way he likes it.
Because he's not going to care what you want. That is still one of my favorite stories. And all these years later, I'm not sure whether I should be proud or embarrassed. But I do love that story. Okay, sports now, and then Sal Capaccio. Stay tuned.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.